This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Pope Francis released his 184-page papal encyclical to the world just a few days ago. The letter from the Pope to all the bishops of the Roman Catholic Church comes as a relief to environmentalists around the globe, as it named climate matters the most urgent and critical issue of our time. In the encyclical, Pope Francis appeals for a new dialogue about how we are shaping the future of our planet. Glynis Board spoke with Bishop Michael Bransfield, leader of the Catholic community in West Virginia, about the messages he took away from the historic document.
Bishop Bransfield appealed to his community just before the papal encyclical was released, asking that they take the time to fully read the document. In its wake, Bransfield says the fundamental message he carries away from Pope Francis is one about how we treat our common home.
I think what he sees is a throwaway society, and where a lot of things, plastics and other things that are, it could be disposed of better, that are not, or not necessary, too much disregard for the ecology and all. And so I think everybody knows that's true. And how do you begin this dialogue? He went to a religious term that this is God's creation. It's extremely beautiful. But it's not just here for us. It's here for everyone, all the animals, all the environment. And so he wants us to respect the use of God's earth, the use of God's world, and to treat it the beautiful way it should be treated, and to end up with it as beautiful as God gave it to us, if that's possible.
It's a tough and touchy conversation to have in West Virginia, given the reliance on extractive fossil fuel industries like coal and gas. Pope Francis says there's a clear and urgent need to step away from fossil fuels.
Right after that in his pastoral, he says where it is economically feasible. It's not economically feasible right now in West Virginia.
More specifically, Pope Francis says, quote, "We know that technology based on the use of highly polluting fossil fuels, especially coal, but also oil and to a lesser degree gas, needs to be progressively replaced without delay. Until greater progress is made in developing widely accessible sources of renewable energy, it is legitimate to choose the lesser of two evils or to find short-term solutions. But the international community has still not reached adequate agreements about the responsibility for paying the costs of this energy transition," close quote.
We are also responsible for the economic conditions that our people live in.
Bransfield is concerned with economic challenges, especially tangible in rural West Virginia, where lack of economic opportunity, he says, is leading to a wide swath of disparities.
When you don't have the money to maintain your lifestyle, the family sometimes falls apart. So the structure that should be protecting them, the family, a lot of times falls apart. So when the family falls apart, the culture falls apart.
Bransfield says innovative economic solutions for residents is what will drive a healthier future.
You know, I used to like the slogan, West Virginia is open for business. I mean, it's wild and wonderful, but it's open for business, I think. And I think the government, as it does try to stress also the elimination of fossil fuels, it should be trying to help West Virginia economically by bringing in other industries or helping with the infrastructure. There are other ways to compensate for the loss that's already occurred in the coal industry, and I don't see that compensation.
Bransfield says the Catholic Diocese of Wheeling-Charleston, as well as other members of the West Virginia Council of Churches, are interested in having dialogue with leaders and innovators. He expects it will take a long time yet, but he says he and the Catholic Church look forward to working with conscientious lay people to secure the future in the coal fields and for all the people of West Virginia. Bishop Bransfield says the papal encyclical did not provide a blueprint forward, but did provide a framework for discussion so that facts can be analyzed and how moral judgment can be based on available data. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:48. Some fog this morning, giving way to partly cloudy skies, a chance of rain and thunderstorms today with temperatures in the 80s and low 90s. Partly cloudy overnight, there's a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms, lows in the 60s. Partly cloudy on Tuesday with rain and thunderstorms likely, highs in the 80s tomorrow.
Support for our weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
U.S. Senator Jay Rockefeller is the subject of a new television documentary premiering tonight on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. The two-hour film was produced with the senator's full cooperation. Jay, A Rockefeller's Journey, is biographical and allows the senator, in his own words, to discuss the decisions he made before and during his political career. I spoke with co-producers Suzanne Higgins and Russ Barber about their work. Suzanne, what was the focus of the documentary as you sat down 2 years ago to work on this documentary? What did you want the focus to be?
I would say that you can take it right from the title. It's Jay's journey. Jay Rockefeller's journey to West Virginia. Jay Rockefeller's journey into public service and public office. And, you know, while we get into the challenges, we cover the challenges he faced in governing West Virginia. We get into what he picked to focus on during three decades in the U.S. Senate. The film really isn't about political positions or specifics of policy that he pursued. It's really much more about the people, the experiences, the events in his life, and what was going on in the world and in the country that influenced him and inspired him and really motivated him to take the road that he took. There were several times where the senator told us, "Now, you're getting an exclusive," or, "I've never discussed this before." And I think he did that because, you know, he trusts the network, he trusted the crew, and I also believe that he realized that these were among his last interviews as United States Senator. And after 50 years, I believe he felt that, you know, if he was going to put something on record, it better be now.
I consider the documentary in some ways to be a confessional. It was an opportunity for Jay Rockefeller to explain himself. This is why I did what I did. This is why I believe what I believe.
What's really fascinating in the documentary are all the pictures of young Jay Rockefeller, of a teenage Jay Rockefeller, a baby Jay Rockefeller. Russ Barber, tell us about the images that you had access to and the kind of research you had to do in order to bring us these images.
Well, it's fairly easy to get archival news film. We go to the state archives and we have contacts there who really help us find what we're looking for. But in this case, we really needed a lot of photographs that showed not only young Jay, but young Jay's world, and his family, and all that. And so we worked very closely, especially researcher Janet Kanicki, with the various organizations, but mostly with the state or with the senator's office, in locating photographs. As I understand it, a number of them came from one of his sisters. Jay Rockefeller is a kind of person who doesn't tend to document his own life very well. He'll document others, and like when he was at Emmons, there are a fair number of photographs of what he saw in Emmons, but not with Jay in the photographs. So Jay's family, his people, his staff, they all worked with us, as well as Harvard and Phillips Exeter Academy, in coming up with the images that we needed. And then there were other places that to some might seem more obvious than others, like the Library of Congress. We had a time trying to figure out how to get footage of the senator during his tenure in the U.S. Senate, and it turned out to be really much easier than we thought. You simply could download a high-resolution file from YouTube.
Let's play a couple of excerpts from the documentary. We know that his experience in Emmons, West Virginia, as a VISTA social worker was defining for him. Let's listen first to Charlie Peters, a former Peace Corps administrator who became very good friends with Rockefeller. We'll then hear the senator talk about the impact of his time in Emmons.
It was clear he loved the people, and they loved him.
He was going to West Virginia to learn about poverty, learn about domestic problems. But now he'd fallen in love, and he was going to stay.
It was really, really hard emotionally to see what they were going through, emotionally to see the way they were getting shafted at every corner by every form of government, private sector. And I kept a diary every day, which I didn't read for 50 years. It was sort of like a sacred document to me. In reading that, I realized how much I grew, how I changed, how much they did, the people of Emmons, to make me who I believe I am. But you can't stay your whole life at Emmons. And if you are going to do something more, which I wanted to, it has to be at a level where the reach of what you do is farther. You had to be in politics, in West Virginia politics, in national politics.
I think that clip is very emotional. It really captures the essence of the relationship Jay Rockefeller had and continues to have with the people of Emmons. And the images that we have, photographs looking into the eyes of these people that Jay Rockefeller saw every day for a two-year period, are really moving.
In this next clip, Rockefeller has served one term in the House of Delegates and is now running for West Virginia's Secretary of State, which we know he goes on to win. But as this next excerpt points out, it's 1968, and Jay's journey could have taken a very different turn following a national tragedy. Let's listen.
Rockefeller is offered an opportunity that could have altered history that summer when U.S. Senator Robert Kennedy of New York is gunned down.
And I was devastated. My uncle, Nelson Rockefeller, governor of the state of New York, called me and said, "Jay, I want you to take his seat." Now, that's very awkward. I said, no. I said, first of all, I think that's called nepotism, but he had the power to appoint me. And I said no to him. It was just immediate. And he said I could do it as a Democrat. But it just gets back to the same thing. I knew what I was doing. I was still in West Virginia early. I wanted to stay.
This was one of those rarely talked about and few people know that he could have gone straight to the United States Senate in 1968. It discloses a lot, I think, about the connections Jay Rockefeller has always had. He was very close with his uncle, Nelson Rockefeller, and the road he chose to take.
I think there was no question for Jay Rockefeller that he was going to follow the path that he set out. He wasn't interested in representing a nameless crowd, so to speak, in New York. He was interested in representing these people who he had come to know somewhat intimately, these people that he was willing to spend the rest of his life fighting for.
Suzanne Higgins, Russ Barber, producers of Jay of Rockefeller's Journey. It airs on television tonight on West Virginia Public Broadcasting at 9 o'clock. Congratulations and thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Beth.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.